What's going on? Thank you so much for tuning in. It's March 9th, the MMA podcast, episode 222. We're finally overlapping. It's TMP episode 222, where we recap UFC 222. I always knew it would happen. Wasn't sure when, but it is this episode, the 222nd edition of both the MMA podcast and the UFC, at least their main event cards. I'm sure they've probably done over 400 events by now. But this was UFC 222. Gonna break that card down, some fight news, fight announcements, all that. But of course, we gotta get to the other man on the line, P Money. He's on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's going on?
Jake, we are maxing out. It is a beautiful day here in California. A little under the weather, but that is okay. We're fighting through it. I dare even admit it. A body in motion stays in motion. But yes, we keep soldiering on. That UFC 222 was just too good not to come and break down.
We got a lot to get to in this episode. Like I said, I'm feeling good. I've actually been on this keto diet, this low-carb diet, trying to cut out the carbs. For those who don't know what a carb is, it's a carbohydrate. Most foods have a little bit in them. They come in the form of things like sugar or starches or fiber. You see a lot of it in stuff like bread, candy, sweet stuff like that. Beer has a ton of carbs. But you can eat things like vegetables, cheese, meat, eggs, stuff like that. Trying to drink a lot of water. You can drink black coffee, which helps.
Vodka.
Because I'm up in the morning. A lot of liquor does have zero carbs. Vodka, I believe whiskey and tequila. I think rum has carbs. I think your sweetened alcohols also have carbohydrates in them, like Fireball. I think that has a lot of carbs. But who the fuck? Hey, if you're drinking Fireball and you're over the age of 23, you need to reevaluate things. But if you're drinking something good, like some Stoli, like a little bit of Jack Daniels, you don't have to worry. They don't have any carbs. Chicken wings, actually, as long as they're not breaded, have no carbs. I am trying to also stay away from things like alcohol and chicken wings, because I think a low to no carb diet would probably be pointless if you were eating a ton of calories. So I'm trying to be moderate when I can with the calories as well. But things are going well. I'm feeling excellent, feeling fine. 2018 has been a good year for me. Pat, I think it's been a good one for you as well in our talks. And it's been a good one in MMA. We were having a lot of fun cards. UFC 222 was no exception. Going to get to that in a second. But first, I want to talk about the week in MMA news. Nothing really stood out, so I'll kind of just regurgitate all of these headlines, see, you know, what stood out for you, if you have thoughts on anything. Canelo testing positive for a banned substance. Honestly, you know, I know he's going to be fighting Gennady Golovkin in that rematch soon, but I haven't looked too much into it. If the fight's still on, good, but yeah, all of these guys, Royd, I'm not surprised in the least. Krokop Nelson, the rematch from a UFC fight back in 2011, added to Bellator 200. Bellator loves to roll out these old-timer weird fights. I mean, you know, it's going to be fun, but let's not even pretend like either of these guys are going to be contending for a title. What else? Overeem versus Curtis Blaydes officially announced for 225. Curtis Blaydes getting that same test they gave Ngannou before he got a title shot. Conor McGregor to officially lose the UFC lightweight belt to Ferguson Nurmagomedov. Winner on April 7th. We all knew that. What else? Botticini Acosta versus Uriah Hall. That'll be on that Atlantic City card, April 21st, headlined by Kevin Lee and Edson Barboza. Cynthia Calvillo suspended 6 months for smoking weed. Just lost that controversial decision to Carla Esparza. What else is going down? Nunez versus Pennington official, which we will get into a little bit of that, I'm sure, later. Cyborg, after defeating Yana Kunitskaya at UFC 222, was talking a little bit about fighting Nunez next and at the post-fight conference. If they were to cancel Nunez, Pennington, Cyborg would gladly fight her, but it does look like that fight is official now. Amanda Nunez taking on Rocky Pennington at UFC 224, what will likely be the main event in Rio de Janeiro. Anything else, Pat? I know you said you had a couple of fight announcements that you had noticed yourselves. Any thoughts on that, fight announcements of your own?
I must say I'm glad to see Rocky Pennington finally getting her title shot at the women's bantamweight division. She's got that 4-fight winning streak going on. She was sidelined due to a car accident. Hopefully she's back to 100% and ready to get in there, fight for that strap. Should be a decent event there over in Brazil. But, we had a few different announcements. Tony Martin versus Keita Nakamura is going to be at UFC Fight Night 128 in Atlantic City. Evan Dunham versus Mirabek Taisimov is going to be at UFC 223 in Brooklyn. And then also in New York, but at a different event, we got Gregor Gillespie versus Vince Pichel. Going to be at UFC's Fight Night event in Utica, New York. Lots of great scraps being added as of late. Jack Hermanson is going to go back to Brazil. He's meeting Talis Ladies at UFC 224 with the same card that Amanda Nunes versus Rocky Pennington is going to be on. Hermanson has been doing quite well down there in Brazil for himself, so it'll be a good scrap against a true veteran of the game in Talis Ladies. And Jim Miller also is going to be fighting in his home state. He's going to be in Atlantic City as well for UFC Fight Night 128. He's taking on Daniel Hooker, who's making the trip to Atlantic City to take on Jim. Should be a great fight right there. Hooker's definitely got a lot of potential. Miller is always super game, definitely a fan favorite, always one of the great scrappers in UFC history. Super super solid 155er. Lots of good bookings as of late, Jake.
Lots of good bookings indeed, and I guess, you know, really wasn't the most busy week as far as news and notes go. I think things are finally starting to cool off a little bit. We had, I think, 4 or 5 weeks in a row with events this coming Saturday. Really, you know, we are, I think, going to have a few shows. Nothing we're going to break down in depth. I believe we have a few Friday shows. 1 FC, ACB 82, LFA 35. But no big shows until the 17th of March, where they're doing that UFC Fight Night card headlined by Verdum and Volkov. So let's get to UFC 222. Start like we usually do with the prelims. Started obviously with the UFC Fight Pass card. Zach Otto, Cody Stamann, and Jordan Johnson all getting the wins there. Zach Otto getting an impressive TKO over Mike Pyle, who retired afterwards. Brian Caraway losing a pretty controversial split decision to Cody Stamann. I gave that one 2-1 to Caraway, as did most people I saw. So we'll see how the UFC plays that one. Going to the prelim card, CB Dolloway and Hector Lombard, a controversial finish. The horn goes off. And look, watching it, I have heard both sides. Some think Lombard intentionally hit CB Dolloway. Some say he didn't. You know, I could see it both ways. To me, it sounded like horn, boom, boom. Like, you know, he gets kicked by Dolloway, appears to start to throw this first strike as the horn sounds, finishes the first strike, which was a right hook, and then follows it up with a left, which, to me, it looked like he started to throw the punch, and it was a combo. I think he maybe, you know, no one knows except him whether he could have held it back, but it ends up going to a DQ because the horn sounded, the first round was over, Dolloway seemed too out of it, and they gave the victory to CB Dolloway. We actually can stop here for a second, because, Pat, we oftentimes talk about the fights before before the show goes live, but we didn't talk about this at all. What did you think of that Dolloway Lombard exchange? Do you think it was on purpose? Do you think Dolloway hammed it up a little bit to, you know, get the fight ended, and you know, knowing that if he was too injured, the fight would be a disqualification in his favor? What did you make of all that?
Interesting question, Jake. You know, as I was watching this fight live, I thought it was definitely an egregious error on Hector Lombard's part. It definitely seemed, I mean, CB Dolloway, he lands a kick to the body. It was just right before the bell. And then almost, you know, as we were mentioning, and it's one of those things, it's a law of relativity. You know, four people sitting at four different corners of an intersection can all watch a car accident, and they'll all have a different perspective on it.
Literally.
To me, you know, it looked, well, literally, and, you know, and relativity says that they're all equal and accurate. But my perspective on this, it looked like CB Dolloway connects and Hector wants to get back, of course, but the horn sounds just at the split second, like he was in mid throw. And I mean, I understand possibly that first one connecting, but he throws this two piece combo from hell after, I mean, it was all after the bell, or all after the horn had sounded, really. The first one connecting, the second one connecting. Certainly the effort in putting the momentum into the second one was generated well after the horn had sounded. I mean, enough time for the cognition to be into effect. I mean, then again, I don't know. I'm not in there fighting for 5 minutes around with the adrenaline pumping, surging to the max. The crowd sounds, you know, listening to the corner, but again, from my perspective, that was my thought on it. You know, now CB should have, you know, maybe kept his hands up after that kick. I mean, just because the horn sounds, you know, it's one, protect yourself at all times. That is the warning. That's the warning they always give. And again, it's like driving in traffic. You know, you can't presume that the other person is going to stop at that stop sign. You know, you got to keep those hands up. You got to play it safe and, you know, wait till the referee has intervened and everybody's come to a full and complete stop. That did not happen, man. It looked like Dolloway got cracked pretty hard there. Was he hamming it up? I mean, I don't know. If he was doing pretty dang good. Pretty good job hamming it up. I mean, he looked pretty hurt. You know, I was reading an article that had come out. I forget which outlet I was reading it on, but about how CB Dolloway was injured from this elevator accident and how he was permanently injured after that. And it was very interesting. You know, it just makes me think, well, does that, you know, how does that impact you as a fighter going on? You know, if you've got this back injury that's going on, and what, you just got to fight to pay the bills because you're waiting on this elevator lawsuit or something like that. That's a tough situation to be in. You know, maybe he was compromised from that and, you know, it hurt his defense or, you know, I don't know. I could really only speculate. But yeah, I mean, it went down as a DQ and, I suppose probably rightfully so. I mean, Hector Lombard basically knocked out CB Dolloway after the bell. Dolloway was throwing that body kick all throughout the opening first round. There was literally probably like 20 different times Hector Lombard could have thrown that combo in mid round in regulation, and we'd be saying, man, Lightning still got it. You know, knockouts, power's the last thing to go. But, you know, now it's a controversial DQ. Very unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it was on purpose, but at the same time, you know, anyone who fakes an injury, obviously shame on them. But as a fan sitting here, I'm never going to second guess a fighter who appears to have some sort of brain injury. You know, these guys go out and put it all on the line, which they say these fighters go out and put it all on the line for the fans. which I hate that saying. They're not fucking doing this for the fans. They're doing it for the paycheck. Let's not get it twisted. If there were fans or no fans, like, I don't think the amount of fans in attendance matter to them as much as the bottom line, how much they're getting paid. I think they're worried a little bit more about putting food on the table for their family than the goddamn fans. But at the same time, it does not mean you shouldn't respect what these fighters do. These fighters are warriors, and these keyboard warriors who sit at home and criticize fighters unfairly, obviously can go kick rocks. And I'm not about to join their ranks and say, oh, so and so, you know, faked it, because, you know, just like only Hector Lombard knows if he could have held back that punch or not, and whether he punched him willingly after the bell. Only CB Dolloway knows whether he was really too fucked up after getting dropped to continue on. I'm not going to second guess either one. It's unfortunate. I would like to see a rematch. I think Lombard wants a rematch. And Chael Sonnen, I think, made a good point on his podcast, which is saying neither guy is really generating too much interest in their fights on their own. I think both have kind of had a little bit of a hiccup in their careers as of late. So, you know, this was interesting. There would be interest, and people would, I think, want to see a second fight between the two. So why not? But obviously, I don't know, Dolloway, I think, rightfully got the DQ there. But who knows, we will move on. The prelims, Fox Sports 1, John Dodson and Mackenzie Dern both getting split decision wins against Pedro Munhoz and Ashley Yoder, respectively. And Alexander Hernandez putting himself on the map, a big underdog against Beniel Darush, and finishes it 42 seconds into the first round with a KO. Any thought on those three fights before we get up into the main card, Pat?
Yes, sir, Jake. Regarding Alex Hernandez knocking out Beniel Dariush, holy shit.
Yeah.
That was, wow. That was quite the first round finish. Alexander Hernandez making a big debut against a veteran in Beniel Dariush, who has a pretty decent UFC record, and you know, he's beat a lot of names, definitely above 500 in his UFC career. And Alexander Hernandez, man, making a statement. This kid built like a brick shit house, Jake. Holy smokes, reminds me of kind of like a Rick Story, maybe, type of build. Just kid's got wings, and he sent Dariush flying there. That was a good one. Interesting split decision for Mackenzie Dern. Probably could have easily gone to Yoder. There was a lot of fights that were pretty close on this one. Some that even weren't that close but still went to split decision. But yeah, Dern, I feel like she might have gotten the treatment similar to Holly Holm making her debut, where Holly Holm probably should have lost that fight to Raquel Pennington. I mean, a lot of people say she did lose that fight to Raquel Pennington, but she was awarded the judge's decision. I feel like this might have been one of those here. Yoder, she did very well for herself. Dropped Mackenzie at least once. Definitely put some good hands on her repeatedly throughout the fight. It was a good showing for Yoder in spite of not getting the judge's decision. And Mackenzie, you know, definitely has some holes in her some areas in her game that could be brushed up for the transition to mixed martial arts. John Dodson versus Pedro Munhoz, very close fight there as well. Good scraps all overall there on the Fox Sports 1 prelims.
And that brings us into the main card, starting with a few decisions. Caitlin Vieira defeating Kat Zingano, which really vaults her up the rankings. Now fourth at women's bantamweight. You got Nunez taking on number two in Rocky Pennington. Holly Holm coming off a title shot to Cyborg. And Juliana Pena there at third. So Caitlin Vieira definitely in the running now at women's bantamweight. She might be just a fight away from a title shot. Andrei Arlovsky defeating Stefan Struve in a unanimous decision, 29-28, 29-28, 30-27. Definitely an important fight for Andrei Arlovsky, as before this, he had defeated Junior Albini, but before that had lost five in a row. So two wins in a row, very important for the Pit Bull. And Sean O'Malley defeating Andrei Sukumthot via unanimous decision. And what, you know, I feel bad for Sukumthot because a lot of people are calling him the dumbest fighter in the world. And I don't think he deserves, you know, to be lauded that much. But it was a very curious decision when Sean O'Malley had broken his ankle or his foot or something. He obviously was in a ton of pain, obviously couldn't put any weight on that right foot of his. All Andrei Sukumthot had to do was back away from him. You know, Sean's back was against the cage, and he was not mobile. He couldn't walk. So all Andrei had to do was back up and wave him over. Sean O'Malley would not have been able to walk on that foot. He would have fallen over, and the fight would have been ruled a TKO victory for Andrei Sukumthot. Instead, what does Andrei do when his opponent has a broken foot and he can't walk? He takes him down and keeps it on the ground for the rest of the fight. The third round ends, and the fight ends. And I don't know if Andrei thought he was winning the fight. He definitely was not. One of the judges... Or no, sorry, all three judges had it 29-27, 29-27, 29-28, all three having it unanimously to Sean O'Malley. One of the worst. This will go in the history books as one of the worst game plan, one of the worst fight IQ moments in the history of the UFC. All you had to do was take a step back, make your opponent try and follow you, and you win. You just need to stand up and step back, and you win. And he takes the guy down. Just, you know, I know he's got to be kicking himself now. And to be in a fight, to be in the moment, everything's going crazy. A lot of times the fight plan goes out the door. But, man, just an unfortunate loss there for Andrei Sukumthot. And another win for Dana's baby. Dana obviously loves this kid. The UFC is promoting the shit out of him. Sugar Sean O'Malley.
Jake, you're right about this being definitely a highlight in poor fight IQ moments. Now, Andrei Sukumthot, he was getting pieced up pretty good throughout this fight. He had some moments himself, but definitely Sugar Shane was really putting it on him. He hit him with some crazy shots. Definitely had Andrei hurt throughout the fight. So, again, and like you had mentioned, just the atmosphere and everything like that, and having your brains beaten in for the first two rounds, you know, maybe hard to stick with the game plan and keep that composure. And apparently, Andrei Sukumthot had said that, I believe it was Sugar Sean O'Malley's corner was yelling things at him, like, take him down, and that he was listening to Sugar's corner as opposed to his own. And he had said that they were very disrespectful, or that one of the corner men in particular was just super disrespectful and yelling things at him, this, that, and the other. But, you know, that's why you listen to your corner and not the other corner. And, man, yeah, definitely had a great opportunity there, because that the leg injury occurred early in the third round, if I recall, although I could be getting that mixed up with the Zingano fight, but I'll get to that in just a second. But it definitely occurred with ample enough time for Sukumthot, Jake, like you said, to even just wave him over as O'Malley himself, he was trying to stand up. He was standing up. He was getting back to the feet. And also props to him, I must say, because Sean O'Malley debatably was even winning that fight with the leg injury while on his back. I mean, he was landing some elbows. He was able to get back to his feet, or get back to his foot, with one good leg. Like, I mean, he was doing pretty dang good in this fight. props to him, freaking warrior. Sukumthai definitely missed that opportunity there, but man, talk about people taking those opportunities. Andre Arlovsky took the opportunity, switched from Jackson Winklejohn, training at ATT, and again, it looks like he's had like a fifth or seventh career resurgence. He's got a two-fight winning streak going on, as Joe Rogan was quick to point out a couple times on the broadcast. That was Andre Arlovsky took down Stefan Struve cumulatively in that fight more times than he had taken down all of his opponents in his UFC career combined. He was showing some good hands, you know, negotiating the reach of the 7-foot Stefan Struve pretty well, and showing great strength wrestling him to the ground. And it was a great performance from Arlovsky. They both showed great chin. Arlovsky definitely took some shots from Struve. Struve likewise definitely took some shots from Arlovsky. So the two guys with probably the most TKO losses in UFC history punch each other in the jaw repeatedly, and no one gets knocked out. Funny how that works out. It was a great fight, though, as very few heavyweight fights that go the distance are. Andre Arlovsky getting the decision victory over Stefan Struve. And I want to say, Jake, that I picked Arlovsky on our last show to beat Struve, which would make an accurate prediction of a Stefan Struve fight for me, which just personally is worth highlighting, just because, again, I've just had such a horrible track record there. So positive momentum in that direction. And speaking of positive momentum, Ketlen Vieira just continues to look fantastic at 135 pounds, unbeaten prospect, taking down the super tough Kat Zingano, one of the few women that has beaten Amanda Nunes, the current UFC bantamweight champion. And she did it pretty convincingly. It was a solid fight. I mean, it was a close fight, I must say. Both women definitely had their points. It definitely sealed it for Vieira when Zingano suffered her leg injury, which I want to say was also in the third round, as Zingano was just going for broke and was throwing some hard kicks. And these girls were definitely both beating each other up. I felt like Kat Zingano actually might have been getting the better of that fight throughout, just up until that leg injury, though. I mean, it's a super close fight, and I think it was definitely a well-deserved decision for Vieira. Man, yeah, it was definitely these two bantamweights, so scrappy. It was a fantastic performance there. Yeah, unfortunate for Zingano, but yeah, Vieira, she just continues to look better and better. And Jake, you're right. I mean, she's got to be one fight tops away from the title shot. I mean, if not, she very well could be next for the winner of Nunes versus Pennington. I want to say that one's going down here in May. So just a couple months away here. And yeah, who knows? Vieira could be right there waiting.
And you know, one thing you said there about Andre Arlovsky taking advantage of opportunities. You want to talk about taking advantage of an opportunity? This originally was supposed to be a fight card headlined by Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar. Max Holloway gets injured. So in for the champion steps Brian Ortega, coming off a victory against Cub Swanson, taking on not just a top featherweight, but an all-time great in Frankie Edgar, one of the top fighters we've ever seen in any weight class of all time, had never been finished before Saturday. I was leaning Frankie, you know, before this fight. Brian Ortega had not fought on this level. He had beaten, you know, the likes of a lot of impressive fighters, including, like I mentioned, Cub Swanson. I guess Cub being his most impressive victory, taking a step up to fight Frankie Edgar and impressing the world. Frankie throws a left hook and gets absolutely demolished with a counter left elbow on the other side by Brian Ortega, who then, after rocking him, leans back to avoid a punch and loads up and absolutely crushes Frankie Edgar with a right uppercut that lifted the man off of the ground, lands on his back, is senseless. The fight's over. 4 minutes into the 4:44 in the very first round, Brian Ortega shocks the world, earns himself a title shot. He will be fighting Max Holloway next. The rumor is UFC 226. I don't know if that's official yet. I know that's already going to be a pretty busy card with the super fight and Cormier-Stipe. I believe I've heard rumors of Johnson versus Dillashaw also being on that card. Not sure, but yeah, I was hearing that we might also see Brian Ortega and Max Holloway at UFC 226. An incredible fight. Brian Ortega stepping up on short notice, filling in for Max Holloway, and impressing the world. And he's next up to fight for that 145 belt. I cannot wait to see. I mean, both of these guys, so well-rounded. You have Brian Ortega, who is just a master on the ground. Max Holloway makes striking look so effortless. Both of these guys have taken giant shots and weathered the storm. This is going to be a really, really, really fun fight. I can't wait to see. But I don't want that to take attention off of this fight. Frankie Edgar still is a savage featherweight. I don't think by any means he's done. But Brian Ortega, impressive as hell. This was a amazing knockout, and against one of the best, not just one of the best strikers, but one of the most ironclad chins. I mean, he has the heart of a lion, and you know, becomes the first man ever to finish Frankie Edgar. Does it in impressive fashion. I can't say enough about Brian Ortega. What'd you make of the fight, Pat?
Jake, it was an incredible display. I mean, Brian Ortega, and also I don't know if enough's being made about his chin, because I feel like, from my perspective, it looked like Frankie Edgar was putting it on him. He was hitting him with some shots right on the jaw, and Ortega, man, he didn't even flinch. He was eating those shots. He was wearing it well, and he was taking his time and ended up getting it done with that uppercut. Man, he deboed Frankie Edgar, and I was very wrong. You know, I had been speaking with some fine Twitter user a few weeks back who said that Frankie Edgar was going to get mopped by Brian Ortega, and I said that nobody mops Frankie Edgar except for Jose Aldo in their rematch. That was a light mopping, but this was a full mop. I was very wrong about that. And Ortega, man, I knew this was a very talented guy with a very high ceiling. But, man, yeah, you can't do much better than being the first guy to finish Frankie Edgar. I mean, that's about as impressive as it gets. And Ortega, an undefeated prospect in himself. I mean, he did have that win overturned for performance-enhancing drugs early on in his career. I want to say that was maybe 6 or 7 fights ago. You know, this is USADA era, has not popped hot since. So, you know, hopefully he is staying clean and not just getting smarter about doping, but actually, like, not doping anymore and things like that. And, I mean, hey, which he apparently is not. He has not failed any tests or anything like that. So, you know, he's just a big 145er, man. He has a very large frame. Looked certainly like a completely different weight class than Frankie Edgar when they were in there together. But, yeah, he did a great job. Frankie Edgar, hats off to him. I mean, not just one of the best in the fight game as far as his skills and his acumen, but just the true fighter's mentality. I mean, he was willing to get in there just to get the shot. I mean, again, I think part of that was also maybe a little bit of a paycheck too. You know, you gotta get paid. But you know, he said, hey, you know what? If I'm the champion, I'm gonna have to fight Ortega at some point anyways. You know, just taking on all comers, man. Props to Frankie Edgar. That guy, he's got some fucking heart. He's got some balls, and a lot of respect to him. And big props to Ortega, man, for being the first one to TKO him.
Yeah, it was an unreal performance there by Brian Ortega. And moving on to the main event, Chris Cyborg versus Yana Kunitskaya. You know, early on in the fight, you know, Kunitskaya was able to keep the Brazilian pressed up against the fence. Everyone's saying, oh, Yana exposed this giant hole in her game. I don't know. We've always known that, you know, Cyborg's one real weakness was wrestling. I mean, Christ, I think Gina Carano mounted her. You know, she has been able to get away with that, though, because not only is she a ferociously strong striker, but she's technical as hell. She throws knees, punches. You sorry, use that big knee to escape the clinch, I think, to start the final barrage of punches that dropped Yana Kunitskaya about 3 minutes into the first round, and the ref ended it as Cyborg followed that up with hammer fists. Another dominant just blitzkrieg once again by Cyborg, who lost the first fight of her career early on and hasn't looked back since. I think now her record is something ridiculous, like 20-1. Yana, you know, it's a weird problem you have right now with the UFC, because for the longest time, the only weight class for women in the UFC was 135. So a lot of women, whether they were naturally 125, 145, 135, if you wanted to be in the UFC, you had to be a 135er. So they kind of tune their body, either they put on muscle, they get lean, you know, they tune themselves to be a bantamweight and fight at 135. And then all of a sudden they open it up and say, oh no, now we have 125 and 145. Well, for the long, you know, eventually these new weight classes will fill out. But for right now, you have all these women who have been kind of tuning themselves to fight at their best at 135. So you aren't. And the other big issue is you have to have a little bit of incentive to make these women move from 35 to now, oh, there's a new weight class, there's 145. You want to give women a reason to move up and join this new weight class and kind of even things out. Chris Cyborg is not a very big incentive for these women. You know, it's like, hey, you can move to 145, and there's nobody at 145, so you'll be the next title contender, and you can get brutally KO'd by Chris Cyborg. I don't think a lot of 35ers are trying to sign up for that. So we have this weight class. I mean, I don't even think in the UFC Chris has fought a natural 45er yet. She's fought Leslie Smith, Lena Landsberg, Tanya Evinger, Holly Holm, and Yana Kunitskaya, who I believe are all bantamweights. So, you know, we might see her fight another real featherweight in Megan Anderson, but that's really the only option I can think of. She thought about, or I guess she was asked about fighting current bantamweight champion Amanda Nunes, or Nunez. I never know how to correctly pronounce her name. I've heard it both ways. But, yeah, that was briefly discussed. But obviously, today, I think it was that it was confirmed that Nunez will fight Rocky Pennington. So that's off the table. Megan Anderson, I don't know if she's still having visa issues. I know that was the holdup last time. Hopefully she can get that squared away, because Cyborg seems like the biggest kind of conundrum when it comes to weight classes. Who you make, you know, I think eventually Valentina Shevchenko will take over that women's flyweight division. You know, you've obviously got lively title pictures for 115 and 135, and for most of the men's weight classes, sans maybe flyweight. But, yeah, women's featherweight remains to be a big head-scratcher, and I don't think you're going to see tons of people signing up for it as long as Cyborg is the champion and she's just dominating everyone the way she is. Pat, thoughts on the fight? Thoughts on Cyborg, the whole division? I kind of went on a little jag there, but, yeah, it was all Cyborg in the main event.
Yeah, it sure was. I mean, Yana had some moments early, like you mentioned, Jake. She She got some pressure on a cyborg. Very, very unexpected there. Seemed like a good, solid game plan. She briefly, you know, she attempted to take the back. I want to say she was working for a choke. But, man, Cyborg, she has grappling chops, and she is super strong. She was able to fight it off, and she was able to do what she does best. She got the first-round TKO to the surprise of very little, but huge props to Yana stepping up on super short notice and taking this fight, saving the card, saving the pay-per-view. Same with Cyborg. You know, she wasn't even slated to be on this card, and she came in, took it late notice, so big props to her for taking it as well. And, you know, you're right, Jake. I mean, the incentive to go to featherweight, I mean, you got a shallow pool there so you can get a quick shot to the champion. Well, the champion is Cyborg. Do you really want to fight her? If you're another women's mixed martial artist, or even a lot of the dudes in similar weight classes, I don't think they would want to have a shot at Cyborg. I mean, she is a fierce competitor. As you mentioned, just the lone blemish in her MMA debut, and since then has beaten literally every woman who's fought across from her, and she's beat a who's who of all of the top women's mixed martial artists. And you know, if she could get onto, say, some other pay-per-views, you know, if they were to do Cyborg versus Megan Anderson, as well as, you know, any other title fight, I mean, they really have to stack their pay-per-views. That's kind of not even necessarily just for Cyborg, because, I mean, Cyborg is a draw. I mean, but just their pay-per-views in general, the way they've been booking them, they've been pretty light as of late, and you'll see a lot of people talking about it, that just the pay-per-views, they're not stacked like they used to be. People want the double title fights, or at least a title fight and a stacked pay-per-view main card filled with relevant contenders, or, you know, and explosive matchups. I mean, they do. I mean, the UFC, they always do fairly well in the matchmaking department. They, you know, probably wouldn't have gotten as far if they hadn't. But it just seems to be a little lacking these days. But, you know, you put Cyborg and another title on the line, and I think, you know, maybe these pay-per-views will start doing some big numbers, which could lead to some big paydays, which could be incentive for other female mixed martial artists to get into the ring with Cyborg. But, you know, the late notice Hail Mary saving a card that was kind of meh to begin with. I mean, it was okay, but then just got decimated with injuries as time went on and as it got closer to the event. You know, that's not going to bring in the most people, but, you know, if they plan it right, do a good stacked proper pay-per-view with Cyborg in there, it could do some numbers and could incentivize some of these other fighters to go to 145. But you're right, Jake. I mean, most of them are 135ers just moving up just to fight her, just to seemingly do the UFC a favor, really. I mean, Cyborg, she is human. She can't be beaten. But man, we haven't seen many ladies threaten her in the last 10 years or so.
And yeah, I guess especially with the bantamweight champion taking that fight against Rocky Pennington in Rio, it's a big question mark as to what's next for Chris Cyborg. For us, you will know for sure what's next. We got a UFC coming up March 17th, so our next episode, TMP 223, probably going to be recapping or previewing that, depending on if we get around to a show next week or just do one after it's all said and done. Follow us on Twitter, and we'll keep you updated, twitter.com/TheMMAPodcast. Pat's on Twitter at SweetPappyJones. You got anything for him before we let him go?
Jake, as always, got nothing but love for the people, nothing but love for you, my man, and everybody, stay healthy, keep that nose to the grindstone.
And keep doing what I do. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you soon. Till then, we gone.